talk about the code this runs on.
Okay. You are aware of the technology they call middleware, because your H2O thing is something like that. Over here it is. I've got a rough picture of what I'm doing. There are what they call three tiers. There's a database with that stuff in it.
Okay.
The whole future of the world to me is databases and interfaces, user interface. The question is, how easy is it for you to change something in the database or retrieve it for some useful purpose? So I'm really at it at the theoretical level. And a few years ago, this was all done through a client-server environment. You were always thinking about doing this locally. But the internet now lets us think, okay, I'm here and sitting here, and I can go on to a browser, which is the user interface, the so-called client-server, has become the browser, it's the client. So now, I write stuff called middleware, which sits in here. And there are four or five major technologies that allow you to do this that are not identical. I wish they were identical. The reason I say that is because out here in the browser, everything has become standardized. There's only one programming language. Microsoft lost that war, and JavaScript won it. The Netscape programming language for the browser was called JavaScript, which is a kind of an irony because Java had nothing to do with it. It used to be called LiveScript. And Sun made an agreement to let it be called JavaScript for marketing reasons, and then they sort of lost it. So Netscape still is the main defender of this thing, but the European Computer Manufacturers Association, or ECMA, has world-standardized it as ECMAScript. And Microsoft has given up on VBScript in the browser. And so the browser has a language in which you can write things, which you can see I've been in computers from very early days, even in little chips. That language is as powerful a language as any I've seen for the purpose of making almost any application I would like to make. It just has one problem. You can't save anything. The browser is not allowed to speak to the computer it's running on for security and privacy reasons. If the browser could read and write the computer it's running on, every virus, you know, cracker out there would exploit that hole. But I've said early on, that's not a problem. I can write to the server and beyond to the databases of the future. So we've been writing spectacular tools that run in the browser. So about, I'd say 40% of the work I do is stuff that goes on inside the browser. And the rest runs here in this middleware environment. And my son is a great specialist, was very interested in Perl. He's a great Perl programmer. He loves free programming, hates Microsoft. But he was sitting down there in Boston and said, these guys don't know what they're doing, these content management stuff. We could do this so much nicer, and we could do it for $1,000, not $50,000. We could do it for nothing. That is now my business model. Orgs.edu's pay nothing. .com, we're going to charge them through the nose to pay for everything else. That's our plan, although I haven't sold anything to anybody. We're now 3.5 years in. Anyway, we wrote it all in Microsoft, and Derek agreed, okay. I asked him to write, the very first thing he wrote was something that would do what's called porting the code from Microsoft to Perl, from the commercial world to the free world. I said, you write me some code so that as we write stuff that's in Microsoft, you translate it. That's what Perl is really great at. Translate it into PHP or into Perl. And we wrote that 3 years ago. And then I said, okay, we're going to keep working in Microsoft, because then at any time when we look like we're going to start selling this to people, we can push a button and get out a draft version of it in Perl and a draft version in PHP. If we had to, we could get something like Cold Fusion, which has become very popular, or Java Server Pages, which have also become popular. We could create them on the fly from the tools, because knowing he's written this porter to go over, he's now written everything very carefully with an eye in view that this needs to be translated to run in the other environments. So that's where we are. We're feeling very strong, and we can make this available on any platform, because the platforms of, in the hardware sense, are Linux and Sun and Macintosh and Windows. And we will run on all, our stuff will run on all of those. But then beyond it, there's a database. Okay? Now the database, everyone who does a content management system has invented his own database. I'm saying, wait a minute. I was very attracted by the interoperability theme at this thing in Berkeley. Because if they were really to interoperate, they ought to get their act together and realize that we all should agree on a standard format for the data for two reasons. One, so that we all know what we're doing, and B, we could interchange it by XML. It would have a lot easier if it had the same fields and so forth. Okay. So that, to that end, okay, of making the database more rational, I have this concept that I should not only open source my code, which is cool, I should open source my data architecture and see if other people would like to have a single, more or less shareable way in which they put everything into the database. Now, the points come from a fellow named Len Inman, who is the so-called father of data warehousing. These big organizations get all the legacy data and pull it together and so forth. He says he goes into a company and they may charge him millions of dollars, and typically what they'll do for them is 30 to 40% exactly the same thing they did for the last client. And they say, you know, you guys have people with addresses and phone numbers and products with stock keeping units and prices, and you have so many things like the last guy. Why don't you take a standard model and we'll cut 40% off the cost? They say, we don't want that. We do things our way here. We've had our data structures for years. We're just going to keep them. Thank you very much. So he can't sell this to any big companies. But when I read his articles, I said, man, does that make sense? People think they got a database program and they're all set. No, they're not. They need what's called the schema, the actual names of all of the tables, the fields within the tables, how they're related, so it gets into what's called fourth normal form and is highly efficient and scalable. If you don't do that, you have got a thing that won't grow, and it's very awkward to maintain. If you do that, you've got something you can really build on, but it costs a lot of money to hire someone who can design the schema or model of the database that tells where the addresses go and how you relate Charles Nesson to his address in an address table, his phone number in a phone number table, his email in an email table, his permissions and privileges on this website in a permissions table, and all manner of relations that are extremely complex. Now, what he said to me was, why doesn't someone do this for everybody? And I said, why don't we do it for every small organization who's never going to be able to afford to get a database schema design? And we'll open up the data model. That's what that one is right there. Actually, you can go on this site, and here's the theory behind it, what we need, how to name everything. So technically, we came up with the idea that suppose an organization already has a database model. Well, we decided we'll name all of our fields ODBM, like ODBC, which is Microsoft's technology for open database connectivity. We'll have open database model address, open database model ODBM phone. And by that, we could take this model and put it into any existing organization and suddenly give them a very high-powered modern model running right within whatever database they already own. We've got time zones. Where are they? Time zone rules for the whole world, because we're called timelines. So we have time zone rules, and our software runs in 24 in all around the world. And it knows exactly what daylight saving time is in Europe and in People's Republic and in Iran. We cover like 95% of the world with these 10 rules. The other rules we'll put in when we start selling. And we even got Tonga, which is a special case. But now the key thing is here, that's a table. But down here is the analysis of this table in MySQL, which is a very popular semi-free. PostgreSQL is the more preferable now, and we're switching to that for our major release. Here is the type needed to do Oracle. Here's what's needed to do SQL Server. And here are the scripts needed to create this table if you're running MySQL. Here for Oracle, and here for SQL Server. We haven't redone this, but when we release, we'll add PostgreSQL because it's free and extremely powerful. Anyway, this is a technological tour de force. It took us a few weeks. We've collected over the years spectacular tables of all kinds, all of which ought to be available to people, and we're going to put them into the public domain of an open database model.